Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking not just about mind power, but about sustainability power. Now, what does that mean? We're going to be finding out from my guest today. It's Stuart Rose. Actually, I guess I could call him Dr. Rose, but I think he enjoys Stuart. He's a pretty down-to-earth guy. And that's what we're going to be talking about, is how we can make our environment, our world, better than what it is right now. I want to welcome to the airwaves of BBS, Dr. Stuart W. Rose. Hi. Uh-oh. Stuart, are you there? Oh, my goodness. Something's happened where he's not...
I apologize. I'm going to break in here. I'm not sure. It shows that he's still there, but obviously he is gone. So
all right, Don, if you're talking, you sound like you're off on the moon.
I'm back.
Oh, there you are, Stuart.
Yes.
I thought we had lost you.
No, what's the last thing you want to do before you do a presentation?
Uh-oh. I don't want to ask.
Go to the restroom.
Oh, gee whiz, Stuart. Okay. Listen, you are a guy that really have ended up evolving, I think, due to your own curiosity and necessity into a very interesting area. The word sustainability, people are batting around like a ping pong ball. And I want my audience to know a little bit about your background, because you have a doctorate in organization development.
Right.
And you've been a professor at three different universities. You've been involved as an educator. You've worked with architects, engineers, all kinds of professionals in the design area.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself are a registered architectural engineer.
Right.
And you really have done your own kind of investigation, and then you evolved towards becoming involved in garden atriums. Now, for my audience, give us a little bit of the story that made you take what you have learned and address this particular arena, which, my goodness, for 20 years, so many people have been trying to bring this to the forefront. How did you get involved in it?
Well, we work as, a partner and I work as consultants to architects and engineers, mostly helping them in client relations and things they didn't get in school. And one of the services we help them with is strategic planning, like where will the growth markets be? Because if, let's say an engineering company that designs highways, is very good at it, but if you hit a streak of 5 years where states aren't doing any new highways, then the firm has problems. So we end up reading a lot of trends literature.
Because
what you see in the news typically are events, you know, a bus crash or a plane, something
right.
happens or an oil. And if you add up all the events, it's like seeing 27 dots in a row, and you can kind of get a sense of where the dots are heading. And in the early 90s, I started seeing a lot of information about the title was sustainability, and I thought, well, it was the environmentalists coming up with the new catchphrase. And then people were actually talking about burning out planet Earth. And if you think about it, it's a big planet. How do you blow out a whole planet? And they were serious. Do you remember Orange Ruffy, the fish?
No, I don't.
That's the problem. It was fished out in 14 years. It was a very nice white fish that came from New Zealand, a slightly little lower depth in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Tuna right now. Do you know in another generation, people will say, what's tuna?
That 90%. Does not surprise me. That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, 90% of all the large ocean fish are fished out right now,
including
tuna. And so I looked at it, and there's a lot of global issues that I don't think I am powerful enough to deal with, or I'm going to not roll up my sleeves and go after. But this was one I thought, well, maybe I can do something. Everybody has to live in a house. Why not create a house that's totally sustainable? And I'll give you my definition of sustainability.
Okay.
If you've ever been to Bermuda?
No, I have not.
Okay. if you go to Bermuda, you'll see that the roofs on the houses are pretty much white, and there's little steps, just an inch or two step, as the roof goes down towards the gutter. And they put the cement wash on, and as the rain hits, the cement wash disinfects the rainwater, and it goes into a cistern. So by law, every building has a cistern.
Mm-hmm.
And your house basically is going to live off rainwater. And if your cistern ever goes dry, and the average house goes dry maybe once a year, you call for the water truck, they come out, and they fill up your cistern. But the rate at which the water truck takes water from their aquifer is less than the rate at which the aquifer recharges, which says they can continue doing that indefinitely. Bermuda
mm-hmm.
will never run out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So sustainable for me says, can we create a house that is lovely, no compromise in quality, that will live with what nature brings to the site naturally? And from a technical standpoint, the answer is absolutely. I don't know if you've seen the photos and the video at the end of our website.
No, I haven't at your website,
okay.
But I've got your book in front of me, and you have a number of wonderful, wonderful photos about some of the homes that you have developed in different parts of the country.
Well, no, they're all here. They're all here. It's a cluster. I found a developer that agreed to coach me because every business has its tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I called, I was in D.C., and I called 25 home builders that were supposed to be the most progressive ones, and not one of them would even meet with me. And
mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking for money, just a coach, somebody that could give advice once a month or so on where's the best place to do it, little tricks of the trade. Because especially if I'm doing something that's brand new and unconventional, it really helps to have somebody that can give counsel about things that work in home development. And so
mm-hmm.
we found one in an area, the general area is called Hampton Roads. It's southeast Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Williamsburg, Newport News, Hampton, Norfolk, Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And the town that we're in is called Pocosin. And the developer that was coaching me said, this little town, which I'd never heard of, it has the highest per capita income in all of Hampton Roads. And it has a lot of techies. NASA is here.
Mm-hmm.
And Langley Air Force Base and Jefferson Laboratories. And he said, I think technical people will be more willing to give up traditional design because of the technology that you'll have. And so the real test actually is marketability. If somebody is looking for a home, can this kind of a house compete with a traditional home?
I know in the Pacific Northwest, there is quite an interest in being able to have what you call a sustainable environment. And that's
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons that I found that it was so intriguing, your material, because I have done interviews with people that talk about, you know, roof gardens and working with building materials and so on and so forth. And
right.
I really liked some of the details that you give regarding materials in a home. And I thought that that would be something that many of my listeners would be interested in.
Sure.
I didn't know that paint actually gave off gases for 10 years.
Isn't that amazing?
All of us know what it's like when you're painting. And they've done a lot to reduce that odor in paint.
Sure.
But I had no idea it was giving off gases for 10 years.
For 10 years. And then you get tired of the color, so after 6, 7, 8 years, you repaint it. You start
mm-hmm.
all over again.
Right. And then also plywood and melamine, also
right.
off-gas, so you talked about having cabinetry that would be solid wood.
Solid wood cabinetry.
And then you talked about in carpets, formaldehyde is used, that people need to use dye-free wool carpeting. And these little points that I'm bringing out right now, it explains a lot of why when brand-new homes are made, they have been made so tight frequently that people have been getting sick,
mm-hmm.
and
there have
been a lot of questions, and even in brand new homes, mold conditions and all kinds of stuff that have evolved. So when I was reviewing your material, I thought this had to take a lot of thought because you really wanted the sustainability of environment wherever somebody might be living. I mean, it's a heck of a lot different back on the East Coast in Virginia than Alaska.
That's true.
You know, you've got a whole different set of conditions, the same being here on the West Coast. Now, there might be people in certain areas of California that would be closer to the type of environment, depending on where you were.
Now, where are you located?
I'm located in the Seattle area.
Okay.
So here
I got my master's at UW.
Oh, great. But here we've got lots of trees, and something that I have been more observant of is if you're going to put together a yard, how can you use in your yard? Of course, we get a lot of water here. We don't get as much as Virginia does in rain annually, but we're still considered to be pretty wet. And, you know, there are things that grow very well here. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, they're just, it's just incredible. So you have these different environments, and you give such good tips in your book, and we have all of this promotion going on about different materials. Sustainability, most people are just beginning to become aware of it. Most people aren't going to want to do a garden. Most people aren't going to want to grow their own stuff. Most people are going to be just so busy working that they're not going to have time for this. But this community that you put together, how long did you and your wife work on this?
We're still doing it. I mean, it's not. When the site is finished, it'll have 7 homes, and 5 are complete, and number 6 will probably start within a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the couple is committed, and they're finalizing their financing, and so construction, I'm hoping, will start in 1 or 2 months, and that'll leave just one site left until this project is finished.
With your publication, Sustainability, you bring out so many good points. And some of our listeners, they may have older homes, and they're going to say, my goodness, if you look at the cost of solar panels, if you look at so many things that we could put in, yeah, they have all of these so-called good deals. But I was talking with a friend just over the weekend, and he said they went and just invested in some doors on a particular section of their house, and he said the price is through the ceiling. He said it's going to cost us $12,000. He said even if we get those doors, we're not going to recoup the money that we put out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we couldn't live long enough. This is a man that's in his 70s. Now, I disagree. He probably could live long enough. But the thing is, that is a challenge that a lot of people face. So what would you say to someone that already has a home?
Well, you're going to love this. We just put on our GardenAtriums.com website a booklet. The architect that I used to do the garden atrium houses is one of the best passive solar architects in the country, Rodney Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now in Paducah, Kentucky, and I drove to Paducah and worked with Rodney for a day and a half, interviewed him basically, ended up with pages of notes, and we produced, it's about 22 pages booklet on how to renovate your house for increased sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers everything that'll deal with heating and cooling and air quality. And we did it at 3 levels, and I thought it was pretty clever the way Rodney started. He said, let's assume that somebody has a home they like and they like their neighborhood, but their kids have left and their house doesn't meet their needs, so they really want to renovate the house also.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was phase one was gut the whole house and let's, you know, in a sense, start from scratch because you may want to change some rooms around and things like that. And number 2 was leave the house alone and just change the skin. What can I do with just the roof and walls? And the third phase is, I really like my house the way it is. What are the minimal things I can do?
Mm-hmm.
And so the little booklet is organized that way. And our Garden Atrium site, we just loaded it up last week. And so people can just download the booklet now, and it goes through things. The only thing that's not in there, which is should be a piece of cake for Seattle, actually, is photovoltaics.
Mm-hmm.
People think that it costs, you know, they'll ask, well, what does it cost? And actually, we make a profit every month. And that blows people away. When a power company has to build a power plant, regardless of whether it's, you know, gas or coal or nuclear or whatever, they have to go get a loan and they have to pay debt service just like we pay a mortgage. And so part of the rates we pay for electricity is to pay down, you know, their mortgage on their power plant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you put photovoltaics on your roof, you're basically saying, I'm going to have a small decentralized power plant on my roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a little NPR noontime talk show, oh, God, it's got to have been 6-8 months ago. And the contractor that supplies our photovoltaics was there. He was one of the panelists. And a caller said, well, you know, what does it cost to put in solar hot water and solar electricity and all this? And he said, well, with batteries and all, you know, say 3 kilowatts of power, which will take care of most homes, and solar hot water, about $33,000. And I said, no, that's
Whoa.
Not right.
And I said,
well, I just said, well, that's not right. And he looked at me across the table because that's what his bill is to me. And I said, well, first is 30% of that is a tax credit. It comes right off your next tax bill. So really it's costing you $23,100. And if you put that on a mortgage, and not only that, but a lot of states, and you can check Washington, Oregon, your area, they have incentives where they will lend you, like they will make a loan, like a green loan, and you can get a 4% loan. Well, 4.75% is a typical mortgage right now in this area, and that is about $124 a month to pay your $23,100 off. Well, that's usually less than what your power bills have been, and that covers all electricity, air conditioning, anything you use that's electric. Well, then there's another thing called carbon trading. And some states now are requiring the power companies to generate a certain percent of their power as clean, renewable energy, which means the power company either has to build a wind farm or a photovoltaic farm or buy credits from people who have already done so. And so we sell our 3 kilowatts for each house to a carbon trader, and they put all these little 3 kilowatt numbers together, and then they sell a big whop to the power company, and the power company sends a check, and they take 10% off, and we get an average of about $135 a month for doing nothing. And we still get the power, which means by the time the dust settles, we have free electricity, and we've actually made about $10.
Mm-hmm.
So when people ask, what does it cost? It's like, that's, you actually make money. It's a revenue producer.
Well, this is a point of education that I think many people, when they go to talk about it and programs, I know that I have seen, there are people that have made the investment that say they haven't really gotten any return on it. They realize that they are not going to do it. So you've presented a particular perspective that is informative and gives out information. So your website, it's a good thing, and we'll mention that again. Talk about QFU. What is QFU?
QFU, oh, the, well, you mean where is the, it's a town in eastern China.
Okay.
And you know, in the United States, so many subdivisions are all given British titles, you know, like a little ranch homes that are called the Buckingham Development or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, for atriums, why not name our different models after great buildings that have atriums. And so the one I'm in is larger, and we called it Phaistos, which is from the Minoans on Crete. They built Heraclea and Phaistos were the two great palaces, and Phaistos has wonderful white columns out of marble and stuff, and so we named this one. But in QFU, there's the family in Chinese history that was governors of that province, lived in QFU, and the family name was Kong. K-O-N-G, and the head of the family would be like a governor of a province. And in those days, we're talking 450 B.C., when you went to see the governor for some business, there's no motel across the street, so they provided quarters for guests. And in that home, there are lovely little atriums. So from the guest rooms, you'd go out to, there'd be a little bench and a sprig of bamboo and a little trickle of water, and they were very lovely, intimate atriums.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the family, by the way, in around 450 B.C., decided to use some of their money for cross-cultural travel, which in those days would be like a safari, and he'd go away for 6 months and come back, and he would share what he learned from these other cultures. And eventually he became known as Kong the Great Teacher, and the Chinese word for great teacher is Fuzi. So he became known as Kong Fuzi, which the missionaries evolved into Confucius. So it was actually his home. And he's buried right up the road from there. There's a big cemetery. So we thought we'd name these smaller garden atriums, and these are like 2,300 square foot houses.
Mm-hmm.
The QFU.
Mm-hmm.
And the small one is three bedrooms, two baths, and an office. Everybody seems to have a home office.
Yes.
And what I want to do is get, and the developer told us that real estate works like a Christmas tree. The number of people that can afford a $5 million home is very limited. Then up $3 million, and then $1 million, and then $500,000. And as the price comes down, he said, it's like a Christmas tree. The audience, potential buyers, gets bigger. And so when we did our first house, which is 70 by 70, he said, people are not going to buy a 4,900-square-foot house.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to adjust it. So the face dose is rather large and probably will never be duplicated. But we came down to the chufu. And that's what people have been buying.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense because there are a lot of people, if they don't have family, 2,300 mm-hmm. square feet, it's very comfortable.
Oh, more than enough.
Yeah, it's
the next
very
project
comfortable.
I do, I want to get it even half of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, you learned some lessons in this process, many lessons, and that's
oh,
just
yeah.
the way life is. In the garden atrium, you talk about the heating, cooling, the power generation, and the rainwater harvesting system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this I found interesting. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we get quite a bit of rain.
Oh, yeah.
So utilizing that is great, but how do you deal with sanitation? Standing water, you can have mosquitoes. What do you do? How is this kept so that the water system is healthy?
The cistern that we put in is a box in the ground. It's a fiberglass box, and we have metal roofs, so there's no particles, which you'll get if you have shingles.
Mm-hmm.
And the water simply runs down the metal roof into a gutter, downspout, and from the bottom of the downspout, it goes into a pipe and into the cistern. And when it's enclosed like that, you're not going to get algae and mold. They don't do well in dark, and you won't get mosquitoes. And these houses are not 100% on rainwater. The fifth house that we did is off the grid on water,
mm-hmm.
and so they have a well for backup. And so what happens is the rainwater comes in, but it's not necessarily potable water. And so in our home, the toilets and the hose bibs, in the first four garden atrium homes, the toilets and hose bibs run off rainwater. And so when you flush a toilet, there's a little pump in the cistern, and it sends water through a filter that removes particles and sends the water to the toilets or to a hose bib if you're washing a car or watering your gardens, that type
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Okay.
And in the local area, most people here have a water bill that's about $90 every 3 months, and our bill runs around $3. So
now,
the biggest water uses are, I mean, a pot of coffee doesn't use hardly anything compared to a toilet that's flushed 8 times a day.
True.
The West Coast of the United States and the Southwest are the ones that really have water problems. And, in fact, I had one of my engineers from Coeur d'Alene help me with the rainwater harvesting design for these houses because there's much more experience out there in dealing with rainwater. But we have not run into problems with mosquitoes or algae or anything like that.
Now, you say also, now, are you connected to a sewage system?
Yes.
Okay.
We are on the grid for wastewater.
Okay.
Next project, I'll go off-grid.
Okay, because that would present another set of circumstances, because you'd
mm-hmm.
have to have a filtering system of some kind that would be implemented for materials.
I ran across a researcher. He's a NASA researcher who did the study for air quality on long-term space missions.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wondering whether they had to go to mechanical systems or if they could use plants. And so he did a lot of research about which plants would take certain chemicals out of the air. And he did a little book, which you can get. The guy's name is Wolverton, Dr. B.D. Wolverton. And he did a little book called How to Grow Fresh Air. And when we did our atriums, I just thought, well, what can I grow inside that I can't grow outside? So I put in citrus trees. We have lemon and lime and orange and
mm-hmm.
Mango. And and birds of paradise and peace lilies. And also a little tree I wanted to cover the ground under the big trees, a little plant, called the Boston fern.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took some pictures of the atrium and the plants and emailed it to him. I found his email address and said, I wonder if you could come up here as a consultant and tell me, you know, what's really good about air quality. And we had already hired a toxicologist who measured, and our carbon dioxide was around 300 parts per million, which is what outside air is. and our oxygen levels are about three times higher than outside air, and it's from the broadleaf plants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he emails back and says, can I use these pictures for a new book I'm doing? Because it has everything I would ever want to have. And it turns out the little Boston fern, which you can get at most nurseries, inexpensive, it naturalizes, is the king of the hill for taking toxins out of the air. So besides using materials that don't off-gas, we also have a number of these Boston ferns in the atrium, and they simply take toxins out of the air. And every resident has lost their allergies in about 2 to 3 days. That's the spooky part.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, that is. I mean, they get a little puzzled because some of them have had allergies for years.
Uh-huh.
Well, then the other part, you're talking about wastewater. He started using plants for treating wastewater. And he wrote a book on how to grow fresh water. And these are just little books, I would guess, get them from Amazon. I think that's where I got them. And he's done it on a number of buildings, and including the NASA facility in Mississippi. But then I wonder, well, how about cold weather climates? And he actually did an entire town in southwest Virginia, which is up in the hills. And he said the cost for the system with plants is about 20% of what it is for a mechanical system that most cities use. And the maintenance is a fraction of it. And the system gets better every year because the plants are growing. They're getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, it looks like a farm furrow. You know, you see the plants and you see a little furrow, and it looks like it's about 150 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And they say you can take effluent coming out of a septic tank and dump it in there. And as it gets to the other end, it's absolutely clean, potable water.
Oh, yes, that I know for a fact. That I know is a very real thing. That's what plants do. They're just phenomenal. Now, I want to talk about people. You had to deal with regulators.
Yes.
Then many times people that are in the positions of enforcing regulations are not necessarily that well educated. But what you said, you had to deal with some of this. How would you want a person to approach someone? Because so often there's a confrontational attitude, and it doesn't need to be there. We need to have a cooperative environment.
You just hit a really sore subject.
Okay.
I mean, it's the battles that we've been doing. We found, and Pocosin's a small town, so the people that are called planners actually don't have any degrees in planning, like the 60-hour master's city regional planning. They don't have that. It was a woman who was a clerk who got promoted to planner.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were asked to come up with, like, cluster zoning regulations, They group, the planning commission, were basically just lay citizens, and they really looked at it like an architectural review board and had never done any research. The staff didn't do any research. And when we talked to them about what we're trying to do, the staff, not so much the locals, but the staff said, what you're proposing sounds like it could be good, but if we approve it, we're setting precedent. And then if any of the public challenges this because it's new, we have to defend it, and they don't like to take risk. So you'll find the people that work for governments are basically saying, I need something that's a little more secure as a job, where I'm not sticking my neck out quite so much. And they're very gun-shy of attacks the public makes at city council meetings or other things where they're going to be pointed at. And so that's one of the things where if it's the same thing that's been done for 50 years, they have no risk when they approve it. I asked the regulators on the last house that we did last year if we could go off-grid on water. And their answer was, if the state health department says you can do it, you can do it. So I went over to the state health department, and there was a woman in charge of it, and she brought her boss and a colleague over, and I gave them a tour, and they said, this is amazing. This is exactly what people need to do. So now we hit regulators that were really enthusiastic, and they worked with us on how to work around very archaic regulations. Well, we could do this, and we could do that. We could work around this. And so we didn't get 100% of what we wanted. Like what I'd like to have had ideally, we put in a well. And what I wanted was to go from rainwater in the cistern through an ultraviolet light, which will take care of disinfecting, gets rid of any pathogens, and then through reverse osmosis, so you're delivering absolute pristine water to the whole house, one pipe system. And then you have a float valve in the cistern, so if you have an enormous dry spell, and this area will get dry spells of like 7 or 8 weeks with no rain. And if you get that kind of dry spell and it gets low enough, the float valve, like in the toilet, will kick on and the well will simply add a foot of water to the cistern. And she said, I can't do it. There's a regulation that says that you can use a well if it's your primary source of water. And we said, well, 95% of the water is that we're using right now is rainwater. Well, how about if we bend the reg to say primary source of potable water? But she said, I can't eliminate the reg totally. So the fifth house is off-grid, but their potable water comes from a well and then goes through an RO filter. But the rest of the house is still using the rainwater.
Well, I'll tell you what. Stuart, your book, Sustainability, just has so much good information in it. I know people that are very much involved in waste treatment systems and all kinds of variables, and I compliment you for having the courage and the sustainability, using your own word, to still go through the hoops as it is necessary, because it is something that, my goodness, they're using developments for space travel. There's so much that needs to be done. And we have to change the way we think. We have to change what we're doing, because otherwise we are going to be defeating ourselves. So I compliment you. Now, your website, let's have your website again.
Oh, gardenatriumsplural.com.
Gardenatriums, and that's plural.
Dot com. And on the home page, there's about 6, 7, 8 pages that explain sustainability, and at the end of the site, there's a photo tour in color, and we try to update it periodically because the plants do grow. And there's also a video that PBS shot that's about 4 minutes long. And then on the front, we've got some icons. One is to a blog site. I'm doing some blogs now. And one is to the book. And one is to that new little booklet on renovating your house. And I have another one that I'm working on now, which will be dealing with power, electricity, and how to basically eliminate your power bills. And I'm hoping that'll be up in 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, you've heard it here. Stuart Rose. Go to his website, gardenatriums.com. You might be able to do something right where you are right now, and it doesn't necessarily have to cost you a lot of money, but you have to start somewhere. So why not go to his website, check it out, look at his book, Sustainability, and I think you might be inspired. And the photographs in it are wonderful. Thank you so much, Stuart Rose, for being my guest today. It's been a delight.
I enjoyed it. It was a delight here as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't forget, Sustainability. Go to his website, gardenatriums.com. Stuart Rose. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reigned. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Change, change, change. Development, technology, so many things going on. We really do live in very exciting times. But change, well, it's something that we have to be willing to move with, and it's not always easy, nor is it convenient. Oh, by the way, I wanted to let you know, my newsletter went out today. Oh, I know we've got a caller on the line, but before I go to the caller, I want to say a couple of things. First of all, my newsletter went out today. I apologize. I got sidetracked. I was doing some research, so I didn't get it out until just a few hours ago. So if you are on your computer, you can go in. It will not be up on my website until tomorrow. I was late in getting it out to my webmaster as well. So the newsletter is out, and there's information in there about shows that I'm going to be doing once a month, and one show I'm going to be doing every week with another talk show host. So you're going to be hearing about that or reading about that in the newsletter. So you can go to DelphiInternational.com probably tomorrow, and you'll find it there if you're not a subscriber to the newsletter. Or if you'd like to have me send it to you, it's free, and you want to know what's going on and what's happening, then all you have to do is send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and I'll be glad to put you on the subscriber list. Okay, let's go to our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Lee from Florida.
Hi, Lee.
Hi.
Did you have a chance to hear our guest today on sustainability?
No, I just tuned in.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you really missed something, because in Florida, you people there, my gracious, you have all kinds of situations with droughts that occur every once in a while and working with water. And so it's
been real. Yeah, we've got a lot going on here.
Yes, you have. So it might be something, if you have a chance, you might want to listen to the archives, because...
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, it's really important, because you guys have gone through a lot of challenges with water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lee, I know we've got a little bit of a time delay and mm-hmm. when I was listening to you, so I'll stop talking, take a deep breath, and then start up, because otherwise we're going to be talking over each other. The first thing I'm looking at, Lee, with you is... keep the brakes on. Don't worry about trying to make changes too fast right at this moment, because you are having to think some details through. If you really feel flustered, you need to have someone you can talk to that can look at the facts with you, be detached, and give you feedback that is going to enable you to feel secure in the action that you're going to need to take. Now, this could be relating to work. It could be something personal. I'm not getting any particular discriminatory images here that tell me what it's related to. But you are really needing to pay attention to details. There are dollars attached to this, so how you think, what you do is really going to make a difference. So I encourage you to be wise. I encourage you to be astute. And don't feel badly if you don't have all the numbers and points of information that you need. That's okay. You're going to be all right. But take that extra bit of time to check things out carefully. Don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it. Also, it looks like you're going to be packing for some kind of a short trip. It's some kind of a celebration with, I believe, some friends. Could involve members of the family. It's just a short excursion, but it's a good break, and I would say take it. It looks like it'd be coming up, maybe in the next 6 weeks. And I know that it's not going to cost you a whole bunch of money, but you will be enjoying yourself. And you need to take better care of yourself. You really need to take a very proactive approach with yourself and your wellness. You're seeing some people around you going through some physical challenges. And if you are alert and if you're aware, you'll be able to take care of what needs to be done in an appropriate manner. So take care of yourself, because there are some things that are bothering you, And again, you're listening to all kinds of people, and there's all kinds of information you're getting pummeled with. That's just the way the world is today. Realize you can take the initiative, and you can enjoy good health. You don't have to be sick. What would you like to ask me today?
Well, all that stuff that you were talking about, I've got a legal case pending with this ex-husband of mine, and he has been harassing me with other people. He's got other people calling me about bogus jobs. I'm getting bogus text messages. I mean, he does everything through other people. You know, he doesn't do anything directly to myself so that I could press charges on him. He does everything through other people.
Well, I think you need to, and I know we don't have time on the air to go through the details on this, but you need to really be able to detach yourself from this. You already understand what he's doing and why he's doing it. So you need to look at how you can screen these things and what process you need to follow, if necessary, to trace it back to him so that you have clarity. And this may require talking to your attorney. The biggest thing here is a disassociation. That's the word I would use. You need to recognize that you're responsible for your life and you don't want to play the role of victim. As long as he can create the agitation that makes you adopt that role, then he's got you playing the game. When you no longer play the game of victim, but you have to think it through very carefully. You really have to have someone else that you can talk with where you can take the specific steps so that you do what you need to do to protect yourself, to handle things accordingly. If you're getting the emails, put them all in a file somewhere. Put them in a file, put them aside. But you need to disassociate personally. Don't let your emotions get into this. You do that, then you're going to be doing exactly what he wants you to do.
I mean, how long do you see this legal process going on?
Well, it could go on for a year. It doesn't have to. If you have good counsel, now I want you to listen to what
I'm saying. I don't have a lawyer. I can represent myself.
No, that's not going to work.
I don't have the money for a lawyer.
You're going to need, there's legal counsel you can get. Mm-hmm. Check in your environment about complimentary legal counsel. Because I bet in your community there are those people that work with people that are of an income that cannot afford it. So there are those sources, and you need to find out about those sources. Because if you don't have someone that's going to sit, you know, to assist you with this, you're not going to be able to represent yourself very well. You're going to get too emotional. So you need some help here.
I've contacted legal aid. They told me they can't help me.
Well, find out about some other people that are knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just because one person said something to you, ask questions. Reach out for those support groups in your local area for abused women. They often know people.
I've called domestic abuse. They told me that the legal counsel couldn't help me.
Keep asking. There are people that can give you good information. Keep asking. Don't give up, Lee.
Okay, thank you.
Don't be the victim. Keep going.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, dear. Have a good day. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break for a minute. By the way, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Claire Cooper Marcus. This is a woman that took a trip to an island. If you ever wanted to get away someplace like that, just go to an island, well, Claire did. Her book, Iona Dreaming, is a wonderfully written story about what she discovered. So we'll be talking with her tomorrow. So I hope that you can join me. This is Donna Siebel. Telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, for those of you in the state of Washington who are listening to the show, this coming weekend is the first weekend of the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. And I'm going to be there along with hundreds of other people, and we're all going to be in costume, but I'll be there doing readings, and I invite you to join us. It is a marvelous event. And finally, we've gotten some glorious sunshine in our Seattle area, and I think we're just going to have fabulous weather on the first weekend. So if you can come on out, the first 3 weekends in August where this wonderful event is going on, it's totally oriented towards the family. Look for my booth. I'll be right on the first road there at the fair, and you'll see bright yellow banners with large red lions on them, and that is my insignia, if you will, my statement of my booth. And I'll be doing many readings there. I'll also have an abundance of books on display as well. So I invite you to come by. If nothing else, just say hello. Be prepared for a magnificent weekend. It's going to be at the Maris Farms in Buckley. You can go to the Washington Ren Fair site, and you will find all of the information that you need. So I hope you can join me. Also, if you have a paranormal story, an experience that has been very meaningful to you, could be out of body, could be past life experience, it could be something with dreams that come true, whatever it might be, it's your unique experience, I'd love to hear your story. Send it to me at Donna@DelphiInternational. And the reason I'm interested is because I am putting together 100 stories for a book, and I'd love to hear yours and to include yours in this publication. So I do hope that you'll be sending it along to me. Again, send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Okay, now let me share something with you that came across my desk. It's about identity theft. This is something, and for those of you that are regular listeners, you know that it was about a month ago that my checking account was hacked electronically. That was an eye-opening experience. Well, after I shared my experience with people, I had one young lady tell me, oh, my credit cards, this is what's been going on with them. I mean, this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. So I wanted to share some information with you that makes us more cognizant of how careful we really have to be today. Because there are those people out there that have such sophisticated software, and if you use your computers, you may find yourself getting hacked, just like I did. So I don't want it to happen to you, and I really wanted you to be aware of some things that you can do. even, and this is according to a man by the name of Cilio, he said, it can happen to anyone, anyone. The most innocent data, such as names, addresses, and employment histories, are at risk. Now, this is a gentleman who is an ID theft specialist, and he is a spokesman for a manufacturer that produces shredders. Now, he said, when you listen to media, they talk about the high-tech methods of data theft. The reality is that most crimes occur the same way they did 10 years ago, through human error. And this is what he goes on to say. Every office is filled with potential hazards, from unshredded reports to computers left logged into private networks and sensitive documents that end up in the trash. Your shredder needs to become a very good friend. He had been victimized himself through his own negligence. He forgot to destroy personal mortgage documents, and he was naive. He had an untrustworthy associate that managed his firm's accounting. Now, that's not something that's new. Often this has been found out before. He said, there isn't enough caution you can give about the importance of being attentive. He said his partner was found out. He's in jail serving time, but he got a very short sentence and is out working for other private companies again. And he said, I'm still dealing with the process of identity theft. Do you know what happened to him? Is that someone came to his front door one day and said that he had stolen $300,000 from his clients. The man was stunned. So embezzlement had gone on. Now, he said, sensitive data can provide a windfall to crooks, with targets including bank account numbers, credit card information, consumer data, employee records, intellectual capital. It can be from a family's restaurant secret recipe to your client list. All of this is invaluable to thieves. So financial statements, shred them. They said outdated antivirus programs, get yours put up to date. Don't go cheap on this stuff. Laptops that are stolen that doesn't have software encryption. Documents that are left on a desk in an office overnight might fall victim to an unscrupulous member of cleaning staff. I mean, these are things we have to think of. Now, maybe you don't have a cleaning staff. They said it can be really costly, absolutely costly. This man spent more than 500 hours recovering his good name. He went through unbelievable humiliation. And he had to rebuild his entire credit history, and he lost a 40-year-old business. And the crook got just a very short, short sentence of time. So you really need to be aware. And if you're a business person, you need to conduct all kinds of data tests, et cetera, for those people that you might be hiring. But we'll go into that another time. And by the way, I am going to have an identity theft specialist on the air with me in September. That's going to be coming up. So we'll be letting you know when that happens, too. Meanwhile, remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. I know we are just about out of your time. Do check out my guest information if you're interested in perhaps upgrading a home. You want to know how to do it inexpensively, how to... well, save money, or maybe even make money by saving power and putting it back into the grid, go to gardenatriums.com. Stuart Rose was my guest, and he's got a video and all other kinds of good things there to share with you. It's been a delight being with you today. Have a fabulous, fabulous week, and I look forward to sharing airtime with you tomorrow. Take care. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.